Welcome to this deep dive. In this lesson, we're exploring communicating recommendations using data. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now, let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill.
I am really looking forward to this one. It's such a critical topic.
It really is. And, you know, to kick this off, let's actually look at one of the most expensive communication failures in modern history.
Okay, I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, we're going back to 1999. NASA launched the Mars Climate Orbiter. And, I mean, it was a brilliantly engineered piece of technology.
Well, absolutely. State of the art for the time.
Right. And it traveled millions of miles through space for, like, nearly 10 months, flawlessly executing its trajectory. But then, as it approached Mars, it just completely disintegrated in the Martian atmosphere.
Just poof, gone.
Gone. $125 million just burned up in seconds. And the ensuing investigation revealed something kind of shocking.
It wasn't a mechanical failure, was it?
No, not at all. And it wasn't a math error either. The data was actually perfect. The problem was that the engineering team at Lockheed Martin was communicating their thrust data in imperial units like pounds of force.
Ah, right. And the NASA team was reading that exact same data in metric units, newtons.
Exactly. So the data was there, you know, it was accurate, but the translation just completely failed.
That is a phenomenal example because it isolates the exact variable we're looking at today. I mean, when we think about the modern workplace, we aren't usually navigating spacecraft, right?
Right. Hopefully not.
But millions of dollars in corporate value burn up in conference rooms every single day for that exact same reason.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great point.
We have more data at our fingertips than any generation in human history. I mean, the digital transformation has literally given every single department dashboard.
Everybody has a dashboard now.
Everybody. But raw data, you know, no matter how accurate it is, it has zero intrinsic value until it is successfully translated into a shared reality.
Wait, okay, I have to push back on this right out of the gate.
Okay, go for it.
Because if we are talking about the digitally enabled future, which we are, I have a massive elephant in the room for you.
Let's hear the elephant.
Well, if I can just, you know, upload a massive spreadsheet to a generative AI platform right now, and that AI can find statistical anomalies, run a regression analysis, and just spit out a beautifully formatted scatter plot in, what, roughly 4 seconds?
Yeah, easily, maybe three.
Right. So why on earth is a young professional spending their time learning how to do this manually? I mean, isn't human data translation kind of a dying skill at this point?
It is a totally fair question. I hear it a lot. But it fundamentally misunderstands what organizational leadership actually needs from you.
Okay, how so?
Well, algorithms are phenomenal at identifying correlations, right? Mm-hmm. They generate great summaries. They basically give you the what.
The what, yeah.
But an AI does not sit in your company's quarterly earnings call. An algorithm doesn't know that the marketing director is highly defensive about the new ad spend.
Oh, that's true. It doesn't know the office politics.
Exactly. Or it doesn't know that the CEO is specifically prioritizing short-term cash flow over long-term market share this quarter. AI misses all that nuance.
So it's blind to the actual environment.
Right. The human differentiator, and honestly, the reason you will always have a job if you master this, is context.
Mm.
AI gives you the output. You have to provide the so what.
So what? I like that.
Yeah, you have to translate that mathematical output into a compelling human narrative, one that actually navigates the politics, the emotions, and the strategic goals of your specific audience.
Okay, I see the distinction now. It actually reminds me of the dynamic in a courtroom.
Oh, interesting. How do you mean?
Well, think about a high-stakes trial. The raw data is basically the forensic evidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
The DNA swabs, the cell phone tower pings, the blood splatter analysis.
Right, the hard facts.
Exactly. Technically, the jury could just look at all those lab reports and figure out the truth on their own, but they don't.
No, they'll be completely overwhelmed.
Right. They need a defense attorney or prosecutor to stand in front of them and weave all those disconnected, highly technical data points into an undeniable narrative, a story of guilt or innocence.
That's a great analogy.
Because if the attorney just, like, dumps a box of microscopic evidence on the jury box and says, figure it out, they lose the case.
That is exactly how influence works in a corporate hierarchy. Leadership relies on translators. And what is insidious about a failure to translate when you just dump the forensic evidence on the jury, so to speak, is the hidden psychological cost.
A psychological cost? What do you mean?
Well, let's say you present a slide to an executive board. And it's a spaghetti chart.
Oh, no, not a spaghetti chart.
Yes, it has 15 intersecting lines, three different y-axes, and this massive, complicated legend. What do you think happens in that room?
I would assume the executives just say, I don't understand this, please clarify.
You'd think so, right? But human psychology completely gets in the way. Executives rarely want to raise their hand in a room full of their peers and admit they don't understand a chart.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because of ego.
Exactly. It threatens their status. It makes them feel insecure. So instead of asking for clarification, what do? They just nod.
They fake it.
They pretend to comprehend the data. But because they don't actually understand it, they are terrified of making a bold, risky move based on that data.
So what's the result?
To protect themselves, they will vote for the safest, most conservative status quo option on the table.
That is wild.
Right. The company stagnates, not because the data didn't point to a brilliant new strategy, but because the complexity of the presentation literally made the leadership team feel stupid.
That is fascinating. So poor data communication doesn't just cause confusion. It literally drives mediocre corporate strategy because it breeds insecurity in the decision makers.
Precisely. You nailed it.
But if the stakes are that high, like a stalled company strategy and a ruined professional reputation for the person presenting, how do we actually fix it?
Right.
Because boiling down a 50,000 row spreadsheet without losing the nuance feels kind of impossible.
Mechanically, it all comes down to managing cognitive load.
Cognitive load. Okay, break that down for me.
The human brain has a finite amount of working memory. We can only hold and process a few pieces of information at any given millisecond.
Right.
So when you put a complex visualization on a screen, the audience's brain has to spend processing power just decoding the visuals themselves.
Like just figuring out what the colors mean.
Exactly. They have to match the color blue to the word revenue and the color red to the word expenses. And if you make that visual too complex, their brain spends 100% of its energy just trying to read the map.
Leaving 0% of its energy to actually evaluate your business recommendation.
Exactly. You are forcing them to do the heavy lifting of translation.
Which perfectly brings us to a concept from our materials that I think is, honestly, the biggest trap for young professionals.
The curse of knowledge.
Recursive knowledge, yes. Have you ever played that game where you tap the rhythm of a famous song on a table?
Oh, yeah. And you expect the person sitting across from you to guess the song.
Right. And usually with terrible results, right?
Yeah, they just stare blankly at you while you're tapping away.
Exactly. Because in your head, as you are tapping, you hear the full orchestra. You hear the vocals, you know, the guitar solo, the bass line. It is so obvious to you.
But to the other person?
To the person sitting across from you, they don't hear the symphony. They just hear random disjointed tapping.
That is such a perfect way to describe the curse of knowledge.
Right. When you have been staring at a data set for 3 weeks, your brain literally rewires itself to see the patterns instantly. You hear the symphony of the data.
And you subconsciously assume everyone else does too.
Exactly. You assume that when you throw that spreadsheet up on a projector, the audience will hear the symphony. But they just hear the tapping.
And because of that cognitive bias, presenters often succumb to the urge to show their homework.
Oh, showing the homework. We all do that.
We do. They spent 3 weeks doing this rigorous, exhausting analytical work, and they want the executives to see how hard they worked.
So they put every single thing on the slide.
Yep. They try to walk the audience through every analytical step, every dead end, every variable they tested. But here's the harsh truth. The audience doesn't care about the journey.
They only care about the destination.
Exactly. Let's actually ground this in a practical scenario, because the materials outline a great case study of a student who is struggling with this exact problem.
Oh, right. The class presentation.
Yeah. They were bombing this class presentation because they were essentially doing a massive, dense data dump. They were showing the journey, not the destination.
But then they pivoted, right?
They did. They stripped away all the noise, they focused on clear visual summaries, and they led with their recommendations instead of burying them at the end.
Can we project the student's pivot directly onto the listener's future career? Like, paint a picture for us of how this looks in the real world.
Okay, let's do it. Imagine you are, say, 2 years into your first postgraduate job. You are an analyst for a digital product team.
Okay, I'm with you.
And you've been tasked with figuring out why user engagement has suddenly dropped on your company's mobile app. You analyze the data, You find the problem, and you secure a 10-minute meeting with the vice president of product to pitch your solution.
10 minutes? That is a tight window.
Very tight. You walk into that conference room. The VP has been in back-to-back crisis meetings since 8 in the morning. The fluorescent lights are buzzing. They are exhausted. They are secretly checking their phone under the table, and their attention span is essentially zero.
Okay, that is a completely terrifying but entirely realistic corporate environment.
It happens every day.
So if I walk into that room and throw up a scatter plot with 50 data points showing like the statistical correlation between screen load times and drop-off rates.
You've lost them.
I've lost them before I even finish my first sentence.
Completely.
So what is the alternative? Do I just walk in, skip the methodology entirely, and put one big number on a blank slide?
You apply the student's pivot. You ruthlessly edit. You walk in, and instead of a 50-point scatter plot, you project one incredibly simple, clean visual.
Like what?
Maybe just a single bar chart showing a massive spike in user drop-offs at the checkout screen. That's it.
Okay.
And you say, based on the user data, we are losing 80% of our customers at the payment gateway. I recommend we move the checkout button to the top right corner and reduce the form fields from 5 to 2. Here is the single metric that proves why this will increase revenue.
Wow. So direct.
You don't make them work for the answer. You hand them the answer, clearly supported by evidence. You just saved a tired executive 20 minutes of mental gymnastics and gave them a clear, actionable path forward.
I love how actionable that is, but I actually have to stop you here because this is where the theory gets a little murky for me.
Okay. Where are you getting stuck?
Well, simplifying data to make a clean, punchy recommendation sounds great. But how do we do that without dumbing it down? Or worse, how do we simplify it without crossing the line into manipulation? Like, if I am ruthlessly editing my presentation, and I decide to just delete all the messy outlier variables that contradict my clean narrative, aren't I being deceptive?
That is a very real risk.
If we cherry-pick the data that makes for the prettiest chart, we are essentially lying to the executives, right?
This is the crux of responsible technology use, and it is a vital distinction. There is a massive difference between the distillation of truth and the deletion of truth.
Distillation versus deletion. I like that phrasing.
Simplification should never mean removing the factual foundation of your analysis. The core concept we have to rely on here is evidence-based ethics.
Meaning I can't just say, trust me, the algorithm says we should launch the product.
Never. You're simplifying the communication of the data, not the data itself.
Okay, walk me through how that works in the VP meeting.
Let's go back to that room. When you show the VP that simple single bar chart recommending the checkout button change, you are distilling the narrative for their benefit.
Right.
But in your appendix or in your actual digital workspace, you must have the rigorous, complex, messy spreadsheet ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hide the complexity, you just don't lead with it.
So it's there if they ask.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because if that VP leans forward and says, wait, does this drop-off rate account for the anomaly we saw in the Asian market last Tuesday? You need to be able to immediately pull up the raw data and prove your methodology.
That makes total sense.
If you simplify to the point of inaccuracy, or if you hide variables just to make your presentation look slick, you destroy your credibility and you lead your organization straight into a trap.
It is a delicate balance. You have to be the ultimate translator for the audience, but you also have to act as the guardian of the data's integrity at the same time.
It is a heavy responsibility.
It really is. So knowing all this, knowing the psychological stakes, the curse of knowledge, the ethical boundaries, how do we actually build this muscle? Let's transition from the theory into some hands-on habits.
Okay, let's do it.
How can you, the listener, right now, practice this future-ready skill before you are sitting in front of that vice president?
Well, the materials offer a fantastic constraint challenge that I highly recommend everyone try.
A constraint challenge? I love constraints.
It's great. It's an activity designed to artificially limit your options, so you are literally forced to focus on clarity. The challenge restricts you to 4 specific elements.
Okay, what are they?
You must pick just one data set. You must create exactly one visual representation of that data. You must extract only one key recommendation. And you must back it up with just one piece of supporting evidence.
Let's frame that as a direct challenge for you, the listener. Think about the last analytical report or, you know, even just a complex status email that you sent to a professor or a manager.
Think about all the charts and bullet points in it.
Right. If I walked into your room right now, locked the door, and forced you to delete every single chart except for one, and then forced you to summarize your entire operational recommendation in a single sentence, could you do it?
Most people can't, initially. It is incredibly difficult.
Constraints breed creativity, but they also force you to confront whether or not you actually know what your core message is.
And interestingly, the technology you choose to use can actually help enforce these constraints for you.
Really? How so?
Well, the materials outline a progression of practical digital tools, and it's worth understanding why they matter psychologically. It suggests starting with something like Canva.
Okay, Canva. People usually just think of that as a basic graphic design tool.
They do. But its true power in data communication is actually its limitations. You cannot easily build a convoluted three-dimensional 50-variable pie chart in Canva.
Oh, I see.
The software's interface naturally pushes you toward clean, simple, highly readable infographics. It essentially acts as a guardrail against your own worst instincts to overcomplicate.
It protects you from the curse of knowledge by restricting your toolset. I love that.
It's a great starting point.
But obviously, as you advance in a digital career, you know, you are going to be handling massive data sets where a simple Canva infographic just won't cut it. What happens when we need to scale up?
That is when you move into the heavy hitters of data storytelling, like Power BI or Tableau Public.
Okay, the industry standards.
Right. These tools allow you to connect directly to massive live databases. But the real magic here isn't just that they handle more data.
What's the real magic?
It's how they fundamentally change the dynamic of a meeting through interactivity.
Interactivity. Okay, break that down. How does interactivity change the psychology of the pitch?
Well, think about it. If you bring a static, printed slide deck to a meeting, and an executive asks a question you didn't anticipate.
Like, what happens to your projection if we isolate just the European demographic?
Exactly. With static slides, your only answer is, I'll have to run those numbers and get back to you.
And you've instantly lost the momentum of the meeting.
Completely lost it. But if you are presenting from an interactive Tableau dashboard and they ask that exact same question, you don't stall.
What do you do?
You simply click a filter on your screen. The data updates in real time in front of everyone, and you answer the question immediately.
Oh, wow. That is powerful.
It is. You transition from being a passive reporter of facts to being a real-time co-pilot of the strategy. That builds ultimate trust.
That is the superpower right there. You are proving that the simple narrative you presented is backed up by a deep, interactive well of rigorous truth. It's brilliant.
It changes everything.
Well, we have covered a massive amount of ground today. We've explored how a failure to translate data literally destroyed a $125 million Mars orbiter.
An expensive lesson.
Very. We discussed how complex charts breed executive insecurity. We unpacked the curse of knowledge, the ethics of distillation versus deletion.
And how interactive tools can change the entire momentum of a corporate pitch.
Exactly. And as we wrap up, I want to leave you, the listener, with the final reflection prompt from our source material.
This is a great one to end on.
I want you to actively carry this question into your week. How can I communicate information and recommendations more clearly and effectively? Tomorrow, before you hit send on an email with an attachment or before you submit a project, just pause.
Ask yourself, am I making the audience do the work of translating this?
Right. Are my visuals actually highlighting the decision to be made, or are they just decorative proof of how hard I worked?
That is the perfect mental check. Your goal is to be the person who brings clarity to the chaos.
I want to encourage you to stay curious about human psychology, stay fiercely responsible with the integrity of your data, and stay future ready by mastering these tools.
Absolutely.
As a reminder, to truly lock in these concepts, be sure to review your end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities.
They will really help solidify everything we talked about today.
And we also want to explicitly acknowledge the foundational reference materials that informed today's discussion. If you want to master this craft, you should absolutely explore Storytelling with Data by Cole Nussbaumer-Nafflick, published in 2015.
No classic.
Also, The Pyramid Principle by Barbara Minto, published in 1987. And The HBR Guide to Better Business Writing by Brian A. Garner, published in 2013.
All excellent resources to dive into next.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Your time, your focus, and your curiosity are greatly appreciated. Until next time, keep translating.